All right, coming out of closed session with nothing to report. And moving on to item 3, council reports. Council members, anything you wish to report on tonight? Council member Flores?
Yes. We did go to, I saw a lot of you there at the Wellness Center with the Police Association. And during that time, I met up with a lot of people, and they have a concern that was brought up earlier. And I think as an elected official, I need to bring that up. I know it's not something that I take lightly, but we can no longer ignore this. It's commonly known throughout the town that we live in that there is a disparity in hiring practices and promotional opportunities. It is very obvious and evident in this administration that we are not following the proper hiring protocols. And one of the questions that I had, and someone brought it up to me and it just kind of dawned on me, was that why we didn't have the HR manager doing the hiring and recruiting, which that is usually their jobs, not the finance director or city manager.
Council member, how do you know that that's not what we do?
And is this a report?
This is a report.
I am doing a report of my conversations with the community members, if that's okay with you.
Well, I just, you know, typically HR issues are of a private nature.
It's not an issue. It's policy that I'm questioning. And that has been questioned throughout our community. And then it brought to mind a meeting that I had with you, Brett, that you actually admitted that you pursued your religious connections in order to hire Jack.
You're going to get us sued.
And that indicates a discriminatory process that we cannot tolerate. If it continues, it may incite discriminatory lawsuits against our city. It's just not the right. We need a written policy of how we do the recruitment. It's not right of what's happening and what has continued to happen throughout all these years. And it continues to this day. And I just think this has to change. It's been brought forward so many times. And, you know, it's just something. Because I'm elected official, because I serve the community, I have to bring this up.
Yeah, it just seems like in a private situation, that would be a whole lot better.
Well, we have the right to know.
Well,
we have the right to know.
Okay, thank you. Public comments over.
Well, it's not your time either. So,
respectful.
And you're not an elected official.
Oh my gosh.
That's all I have to say.
All right, Mr. Watson.
Well, on a bit of good news. The city of Lindsay has been excluded from any sort of a potential water rate increase in regards to the East Kuia Sustainable Groundwater Agency through negotiations, and that any sort of an increase due to the state mandate will not be passed along to the city residents. So that was very good news. And that concludes my report.
I'd like to report that I attended the Wellness Center Programming Committee, the new name. Me and Laura attended it, and so we went thoroughly through the documents. We had three different documents. We had the funding agreement, the program committee, and including an amendment. So we were kind of confused. So we went thoroughly through each and every sentence to figure out what we needed to rewrite or take out. Also, hopefully, in hopes to combine all three documents into one, so that way we don't look at all three or we're not confused, or the next people that are elected or are going to the committee know which document to go off of. Also talked about Lisa will be posting at large a letter of interest for someone who would like to join us. She will post it on the hospital board, wellness center, social media, and the city as well. And we also voted on the chairperson, who will be Valerie, and the secretary, who will be Laura. And I think that's it. Our next meeting will be September 9th. And then I also wanted to, which I guess I'll talk it to put something on the agenda. So I'll just wait till then to put that on the agenda. And then that's all I have. I'm happy to see everybody here today. And that's it.
All right. Yes. So I see some new faces. So thank you for being here. It's nice to see people, residents come to the meetings and hear what's going on in our city. I want to start off by saying that school began last Thursday, August 8th, and all is going well to what I hear. I've been talking to the other counselors, and surprisingly, things are going well. I'm going to knock on wood. It's just like we never had a break. The learners are back in the learning environments. They're learning, currently developing their shared visions, their codes of collaboration, and it's just amazing to see how beginning in preschool, they're already learning how they're supposed to be engaging with their peers in a respectful manner, how important it is to collaborate, and I really take that to heart because as a counselor, that's what I'm looking for the respect among the peers and among everybody, and to work together with the goal in mind. It's not about individuals. It's about what we want for the rest of our peers and our colleagues. Also, for those of you that don't know, the school district is offering what they call the TSL Learning Facilitator Pipeline Program. Currently, they have openings for that. So any Lindsay High School alumni or any current Lindsay classified employees can apply for this program that offers them an opportunity to continue and finish their education up to the master's degree and obtain also a teaching credential. They pay for tuition and for related expenses. So it's an amazing opportunity that the school district is offering so that we can get more of our Lindsay natives back in town and working in our community. Along with Councilmember Flores and Sanchez, I also attended the National Night Out with Lindsay PD and Fire last Tuesday, August 6th. It was very well attended. All of the kids out there, families having fun, having some snacks. It was a very nice way to see them interact and engage with our public safety officers. One thing I would like for future is if we could get more recognition of this event and pictures. I saw some for local communities, but I haven't seen any other than on our city Facebook page. I haven't seen anything out in the papers for Lindsay. I saw other communities, but not Lindsay. And I think it's something that we take pride in and would like to see more of that. I want to announce that the Lindsay Youth Football Tackle Football League is currently recruiting. They are in a tough spot right now. They don't have enough players. And if they don't get more players pretty soon, they are going to have to forfeit this season. Wow. So we are trying very hard to distribute flyers at the schools now that we're back in session. I'll forward the flyer to City Manager and Lisa. We talked to Lisa yesterday about it, about posting it on our social media pages so that we get hopefully more kids enrolled and able to play. And like Council Member Sanchez mentioned, we went to the Wellness Programming Committee. It was a good meeting. I think that we have something to go forward with now, and whatever it is that we do, if this document that we're going to compile is approved by both governing boards, we'll have more clarity, transparency, and accountability, and a better working relationship to better serve our community, because that's what we want, a working relationship to be able to accomplish things. If we don't have that working relationship, it makes it very difficult to get things accomplished. And that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate everyone's service on their committee assignments, especially in reporting on that. That's a lot of work, I know, to attend those things and do that work. I attended the theater marquee lighting event and even rode in the lift, but not all the way up. I chickened out. Okay. So, but it was amazing to see the theater marquee lit up again. I wanted to point out that the community theater is offering their free Shakespeare in the Park. That was on our consent calendar, but this is a free play. They're doing Romeo and Juliet starting on Thursday the 22nd, Thursdays and Saturdays for 2 weekends. And chairs will be set up out there. They start at like sunset, and it's a nice event. And I attended my first meeting as a LAFCO commissioner, and that's going to be a challenging appointment, but which I probably won't be reporting on much, but just to let you know that has started. And thank heaven I know a little bit about groundwater sustainability plans. I'm there. And with that, I would turn the time over to Bill Ziegler for staff report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First note is a reminder for council and senior staff. There will be a special council meeting at 6 p.m. on August 20th where sexual harassment training will be conducted. We'll have some food there for you. It will be a noticed meeting. Retail cannabis interviews will be conducted this Friday by the ad hoc committee, and Brett representing the staffer, they will evaluate the dialogue, and I will be there, but I will simply observe. So we're excited about moving that forward. I think you have two strong candidates there. Councilmember Flores, as you were asking questions about playground equipment coverings, you've got a flyer up there. Mm-hmm. Mike has been chasing this for some time. To cover the entire area, this would likely shock you, but the cost is nearly $50,000. The large area would cost a little over $31,000 to cover the small area, 17.8. I've been talking with the Kiwanis to see if they're interested in raising the necessary revenue. It's pretty rich for them. They want to do a reverse drawing dinner in the fall to help raise funds, and having a target like that would be something good. But we're also in discussions about perhaps having supervised volunteer labor to do this. The engineering is some of the cost, but nearly half of the cost is in the labor. And so if we can reduce it to something that's palatable, maybe the service clubs and OBF may have an interest in this, the OBF committee, perhaps we can get this done a little bit cheaper.
Maybe so find out of the somebody besides 70-year-olds to
I'm sorry?
Work.
Sorry.
Find someone besides 70-year-olds.
Well, that's therein lies the challenge. We may be recruiting some people to help with that when the time comes, and we will turn no one away who's
that's
willing
right.
to go out there and help do
that's
it.
Bill, right. quick question on that. Has Bank of the Sierra ever helped with any of these projects? Or
in Porterville, they have. They
yeah,
have a grant for
local.
That. They have not done it locally. When we had Robert Martinez here, we were discussing that. Robert's been transferred. Mm. Actually, I think Robert's left the company.
Oh, really?
Okay. Huh? So apparently there is a form, and we've been talking with the Kiwanis about that grant as well. They
okay.
are aware. It'll help with part of it anyway. So okay. all the resources that we can get.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool stuff. Water system, near and dear to all of our hearts. Water plant production has been increased to 1,600 gallons per minute. The good news is the Fryant Kern Canal is slowing down a little bit, so the suspended materials are settling out. We can go longer between backwash cycles, which requires an acre foot. Well 14. Well 14 is the elephant in the room and in the community. It's been experiencing increased amounts of air, and it's introducing it into the water system. In the last few weeks, staff has received a few complaints, but in the last 5 days, especially starting at about Friday, there have been a significant increase in complaints. The area most affected is out west of the old Union Pacific. That's our Western Railroad tracks. And in the proximity of Well 14 out there in the county along Avenue 242. When complaints are received, the crews go out there. They flush the hydrants to get the air out, which is helpful, but it's a temporary fix as long as we're pulling air into that. So what are we doing to address this? Mike had some people out there with the consultant just this morning looking at this. Immediate solutions are now being developed. Staff has tracked groundwater levels, and in the last 19 years, seen these levels drop 122 feet. So it's decreased that much, 48 feet to a level taken today of 170 feet. So what we're looking at doing is removing the well column, which is the device that drives the pump. You've got the motor on the top, the electric motor. You've got the pump down below, the intake bells, and it's what brings it up. That's going to be pulled in a camera. A video camera is going to be sent down so that the casing can be inspected to see if there are cracks in the casing or if there's some sort of failure in the casing. And if that happens, we will address that. Is there a benefit in cleaning all of that? We'll work with our consultants to address that also, where the perforations are in the casing. So options that are being considered, depending on what we find when we run the camera down there, and we'll lose the well for about 2 days when we do that, is the rebuilding or the replacement of the pump assemblies. Perhaps they're worn out. It happens. You know, they wear, they lose efficiency, they can cause cavitation that might introduce air into the system. Possible repair of a damaged casing. If they find a hole in a casing, they can actually repair it, or a crack in the casing, a minor crack, they can repair that. Interior cleaning of the well casing I had mentioned. Lowering the pump level 40 feet would help submerge it in steady, sustained water and increase the pressure going into the pump, the intake pressure. Installing a cascading water interior casing. So the idea would be you'd run a casing within the casing, and as the water spills in from the different strata, it would pool in the bottom rather than falling in on top of the pump and causing the cavitation and the introduction of the air. And forgive me, this I'm giving a real rudimentary explanation. It's my understanding of it. I'm not a specialist in this. And then potentially installing a 10,000-gallon hydropneumatic tank at the site that would allow us, if you think about it, if you had air in your line and you pumped it up and you let it go into a bucket, that you'd have air in there initially. It might look white, but that air would percolate to the top of the water, and then the water wouldn't have that issue anymore. So a hydropneumatic tank might also achieve that. So there are several things that we're looking at. The first step is to get in there and take the video camera down, inspect the casing, inspect the pump and the bells down there, and then that will take us to the next step, and we'll keep you apprised all along the way. Does that sum that up pretty well, Mike? Okay.
Is there a way to get like some education out on our Facebook page, like with tips on to how this could possibly be reduced and not get so much air?
Hammering?
Yeah.
Mike, do you believe that going to the hose bib and turning it on and blowing some air out will be helpful to our residents?
It's a step on property because we're doing it at the hydrants in the proximity of neighborhoods where we receive complaints.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go on private property unless there's a specific
but
request.
But would it help an individual property owner to
and
do that?
We talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. The hose bib, yeah. You find where the water meter is. It could be in the front of the house. It could be in the alley if you're in the city limits. Typically, it's in the front of the house, not the county areas. You go to the nearest hose bib where you connect your hose to. Very, very slowly turn that on. If there's air, it's going to start coming out. And then you very, very slowly continue to turn it on until you get water. It's a temporary measure until we can find out what's causing this.
And it will happen again once they do that, but the air that's trapped in the line between the flushing of the hydrant, you know, and the introduction of the air, it'll move a pocket of air out or a couple of pockets of air. It would be repeated. And that's something Brett had suggested. Maybe we would do a little video on that or something. But
right.
We can absolutely put something out on Facebook to help. We want our residents to know that we take it very seriously. We've been working on it for a while. We do have some good educated, talented minds working on this, and we're trying to come up with the most cost-effective and expedient solution that we can.
And I'm just thinking, I know not all the residents know that. I probably wouldn't have known if I, you know, wasn't part of this group and getting all this information. So the first time it happened, I was like, my house is falling apart, you know? But I think some education, like a little video or something like that, would be good for residents to have available.
Yes, ma'am. Well, we will chase that down.
Thank
I think
you.
That's a great idea. And I have more information about water, but not air in the line, that I'll pass to you via an email so you can review it at your leisure. You see Frontier is not obstructing traffic anymore. They're building their vault west of the site. Ultimately, that will get repaved. That will get filled in and repaved, and then we'll have a normally functioning roundabout. But we are glad that they are out of there and not disrupting that. The rehab overlay Cape Seal Street projects, that's what we've all been waiting on. The bids will be received and opened tomorrow afternoon, so we can go full speed ahead. And some of these projects will happen quickly once the bids are awarded. So we're excited about that. There are six bidders each for the two project groups. Moving through, we got Cal Recycle coming tomorrow afternoon, August 14th. They'll be looking at organic recycling programs, some of what we will be talking about, construction and demolition recycling. It's where if you're going to tear down a house, you have to get your permits and divert materials away from the landfill. They'll be looking at how we're doing that. Our Parks grant application that you've seen people out at the Friday Night Market and Wellness Center, that was submitted to the state on August the 5th. Kaku Park and all the Bull properties were the target grant location, $3.67 million. Remember, quite a while back, we moved money from that to create the soccer complex. It was about $370,000. This is more the amount of money necessary to do the things that are needed at all the Bull and Kaku. So this can really help out. That's the total amount of the application, and you've seen the concept at the council meeting. So we're working with PHA, Mike?
Public Health Advocates.
Thank you. Public Health Advocates have been the people facilitating this for us. They've done a great job. So excited. We will hold our breath and see how competitive we are with the grant, but we have done very well with our outreach and having the community come together to design this park within the framework of something that was affordable. 38 building permits issued in July 2019 with a total valuation of $259,000. Fees collected were about $10,002. I've got a laundry list of maintenance that have been done that I know you're interested in, Mayor Pro Tem. Lots of great things happening at the Wellness and Aquatic Center. Swim lesson registration for Session 6 is currently taking place and private lessons continue. Last public pool sessions, Saturday, August 17th. And Saturday, August 24th. And I think I'll cap it there. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions before we move on? Okay. Our next item is our consent calendar. The routine items that may be approved with one motion unless an item is pulled for discussion. We have our City Council meeting minutes from July 23rd, the warrant list for July 17th through August 5th, Treasurer's Report for July 2019, Resolution 1950, Workers' Comp for Off-Duty Peace Officers Responding Out of State, State Required Updates to Personnel Rules and Regulations, Assistant City Engineer and City Surveyor Assignments, and Temporary Use Permit 1929 for Shakespeare in the Plaza. What action would the Council like to take?
I'd like to discuss that about the, what is it, police officers? Going out of state? Yeah, if you could kind of give us more information on that.
So, Councilmember Flores would like to pull item number 4. Is there a motion to approve items 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7?
I move to approve the consent calendar, excluding item number 4.
Thank you. Moved by Cortez. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
All right. Item 4.
Sure. So as it's become an unfortunate part of news lately, you hear about mass shootings in different places. And sometimes we may have a police officer that's on vacation and find themselves at a location where something like that starts to happen. The rules of engagement are to not get involved, particularly if you're not uniform. You don't want to get mixed up with something, them thinking that you're a bad guy. But when the safety of life and other things is, there's no alternative but for them to engage, the officer will rely on their training and they'll engage the situation. Right now, with workers' compensation laws, if they get hurt in that process, there is no workers' compensation protection for them back at home. And since they're doing something there to protect the community, our insurance company has added a new part to the insurance that says we will cover them if council passes this specific resolution that recognizes we'll take that risk on if one of our officers is out of state and they do a good deed, essentially, in helping with those circumstances.
Okay.
Good testimony.
Yep. Thank you.
Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
By Flores. Is there a second?
Second.
Would the clerk please take roll?
Councilmember Flores.
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez.
Aye.
Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0. Item 6 is a Tulare County Area Transit presentation on Southeast County service changes, presented by TCAT Chief Engineer Ross Miller.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council and to staff. My name is Ross Miller. I'm a Chief Engineer with the Tulare County Resource Management Agency. I, in my role, in addition to other responsibilities, oversee our transit system, and I'm here today with Mr. Albert Berrigan, who is the transit manager who's specifically overseeing exclusively the transit system. So he will be actually giving quite a bit of this presentation for us, but I wanted to just start and provide a bit of introduction. The county has a long-standing relationship with the city to provide transit services for the city. We do this primarily in the form of a dial-a-ride bus. This has been operating for several years this way. There's an annual agreement that the city and the county enter into that keeps funding this on a year-to-year basis. This is not to discuss that funding issue, but this is to discuss changes that we implemented Monday the 5th, so a little over a week ago, to the South County services that do impact the services provided to the city. We think you guys will like what we have done and the increased service that we are providing to the city. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Albert.
Thank you. Good afternoon. As Ross said, my name is Albert Berrigan. I'm the transit manager for Tulare County Area Transit. We'd like to present the changes for Lindsay. I'd like to start off, first of all, with our mission statement. Tulare County Area Transit provides customer-focused, safe, friendly, clean, reliable, cost-effective public transit service, which increases access and mobility for all, reduces congestion, and improves the environment while supporting economic development. This is the overview of our system, current system now. We have fixed route services, which have 5 intercity routes. Our intercity routes would be the Route 10, which provides service from Dinuba to Visalia to Dinuba, our Route 20, which provides services from Tulare City to Delano, and our Route 30, providing service from Visalia to Woodlake, and the Route 40, which provides service to Visalia to Porterville and goes through Lindsay here. We also have dial-a-ride services in our North County, providing service to Cagliarosi. We have South County dial-a-ride service, and we also have the dial-a-ride service provided here in Lindsay. We also provide route deviation for ADA-certified passengers. We have a loop bus program providing free transportation to at-risk youth in the county. And we also have a new website, which was on our cover slide, www.ridetcat.org. So about six or eight months ago, we started to looking at our system, trying to see where we could improve our services. Our goal was to improve transit access in Lindsay, also to provide new service to the new South County Detention Center, and also to add service to the Ducor community. Lindsay Dial-A-Ride. Current services are for Lindsay are 7 to 3. We have same day reservations. We provide service to Lindsay, Tonyville, and also to Tuleyville with advanced day reservations. Our proposed services would still be Monday through Friday, although they would be dial-a-ride, it'd be during the peak hours of 7 a.m. to 9, and again 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. during the peak hours. Still, we would still have the availability for same-day reservations in Lindsay and Tonyville, service to Tuleyville with advanced day reservation. And also, we would still also have additional Paris Transit service available through the new Route 60. Here we have the schedule and the map guide of the route proposed. The starting and ending point would be at the Save Mart Shopping Center. That could also be moved in the future whenever the new transit facility gets built here in Lindsay. On this route, we can still deviate also up to 3/4 of a mile for ADA qualified passengers during the fixed route service. This slide shows the proposed map of the new Route 60 in blue. The current route in red is the path that the bus was taking. So we've reduced our reach out to the west, trying to avoid the traffic that we would run into by the high school. So we're deviating onto Lafayette and also moving the route down to the south, trying to capture as many passengers as we can along Honolulu, where there are a couple of large apartment complexes in that area. Because the 60, 70, 80, and 90 routes have always been done by the same bus, any changes being done to any portion of the routes would affect the others. And so this slide here shows that there are some changes on our Route 70 going to Springville, and also same thing with our Ducor, our Tarabella service, which we've included Ducor also. Here's a view of the expansion of our service from Tarabella down to Ducor for you to this schedule here is the new Route 90 schedule and map. We would still continue to come to Lindsay, but the service would now be the combined Route 60 and 90 and be called now the new Route 90. We've modified the route a little bit in Woodville to accommodate the new Altura Medical Clinic and also the South County Detention Center. Here again, we have a slide showing the new stops in Strathmore, the new route in Woodville, the South County Detention Facility, and also the new Route 60 fixed route for Lindsay. Outreach that was done with stakeholders and riders. We started route testing in May with MB Transit, our operations contractor. We've met with Mr. Rich Tree in Porterville, trying to coordinate our buses pulsing out of the system, the transit system in Porterville in May. Met with Mr. Mike Camarena with the City of Lindsay in May and also in July. June, we met with the seniors at the Lindsay Senior Center, Porterville, and Sequoia Dawn, and also did some outreach on the buses. We rode on the buses several days in June, again trying to reach as many people as possible, and also posted on buses, shelters, libraries, and transit stations, trying to get the word out. The fixed route cost, there would be no increase in hours of service to Lindsay. Additional mileage for fixed route is approximately 11,700 miles per year, and the additional fuel would be about 1,900 gallons with a cost increase of approximately $8,000 to $10,000. So the summary of changes, we have the new Lindsay Dial-a-Ride hours 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 11:30 to 1:30 p.m., the Route 60 with the new Lindsay fixed route service, a Route 80, the added service to Ducor, and the Route 90 combined old Route 60 and 90 added the stops at the South County Detention Facility, Strathmore, Woodville, reassigned the Lindsay service, and revised the schedules for all the routes. Do you have any questions, comments, or discussion?
Yes. On the route to Lindsay, are you stating that you're going to reduce the time? It was 3 p.m., and now it's going to be 1:30 p.m., is that correct?
The service is still going to be 7 to 3, but because the bus really wasn't being used to its full potential, we have peak hours between 7 and 8:30, and again, to return the passengers that we were picking up, the passengers were going back at about 12. Between those two time periods, the bus really doesn't get used to its full potential. So, again, we've examined the service in Lindsay and came to the conclusion that we could provide more service using the same bus for the same cost in hours of service, with just added cost per miles and fuel.
Okay, so bottom line, what time is the last time anyone could schedule?
For dial a ride?
Mm-hmm.
For dial a ride, it'd be between 7 and 9 o'clock, and then again at 1:30 to 1:30, yes.
Okay, so you actually reduced the amount of time?
We reduced the amount of hours for dial-a-ride, but with this fixed route, we also can do route deviations for ADA-qualified passengers. So if there's a passenger that lives within 3/4 of a mile of the fixed route, we can go and pick them up. If they call with day advance reservations, we can still pick up those ADA passengers.
Until 3 o'clock?
Yes, ma'am.
And we should mention, it does appear to be a reduction of service because we've reduced dial-a-ride hours, but what we've done is shifted those same hours to the new fixed route loop. So the community will have a designated bus service that will run 4 loops through the city in the morning, 3 loops through the city in the afternoon for general public use. It's going to be a new circulator operating throughout the hours of the day when the dial-a-ride bus was largely unused.
And for that route, you don't need reservations?
No, it's going down the street, just stand at the bus stop, mm-hmm. pay the fare when you get on.
And that route can take you, so there, you talked about this Route 90, that goes down to Porterville, but there's another one that would take you to Visalia, right?
So there are two other fixed routes that serve the city. So there's the new Route 90, which connects to a bunch of the other Southeast County communities that we've named, Woodville, Porterville, Strathmore, and that will still connect currently at the McDonald's Save Mart location. When the transit center comes in, we'll move that connection point to the transit center. There's also the Route 40, which runs from Porterville to Visalia and stops in Lindsay. That is not going to change right now. That will still have the same hours, still have the same time. None of that service has changed as part of these changes. And again, that route is also compatible in the future. We will move a connection point to the new transit center when that comes in.
Okay. I have a question. I'm a little curious. It doesn't really have to do with Lindsay residents. It's more like Woodlake, only because I know quite a few people who come from Woodlake to Lindsay to use agencies like the health medical down by the wellness center, and they have to take the bus from Woodlake to Visalia, from Visalia to Lindsay, Lindsay to Visalia, and back to Woodlake. Are you guys thinking of having a route from Woodlake to Lindsay and Lindsay back, instead of having them go all the way around and then back around?
We do not have plans for that at this time. We are in the process of updating our transit development plan, and at your request, we can add that into the study that we do as part of this. We can't make any guarantees, but we can at least look into the feasibility of such a route and the likely ridership, therefore.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the information. Appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We should mention we've also put new schedules for the route services over on the table over there if anyone would like to grab one,
thank you,
including the public.
Okay.
Thank you.
Item 7 is request authorized notification of proposed 218 for refuse.
All right, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is similar to what we had in our last presentation on the 23rd of July. The difference in this one that you'll see in your packet is the refuse rate changes executive report that's used to base the information for these rate changes. And in these, on the 8th page of that report, and then on the 10th page of that report, you'll see where it's been changed from a 3% annual increase to increase no more than 5% per year based on CPI, West Urban, or just the West region for that. And so other than that, everything else has stayed the same since our last meeting. There were requests from council that when these notices actually go, that will be in Spanish as well. We don't have those translations yet because we're waiting for approval of the board to do the translations. That begins with a 45-day noticing period. And the schedule for all of that is also in that refuse rate and in your packet.
Right. Thank
questions?
You.
If no questions at this time, what action would the council like to take?
To accept the report and direct staff to proceed with the public notification of proposed rate changes for refuse services.
Motion by Cortez. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Sanchez. This is a minute order. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next item will be a public hearing for Resolution 1949, a conditional use permit for recycling center at 455 Mirage, to be presented by our city manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Jack, I'll need that site plan. And I'll start talking. Conditional use permit 1905 is a request by Ronaldo Orozco to establish a recycling center at 455 South Mirage, which is where the grocery store is. We've had one there before. If you look at your screen, you'll see the tiny rectangle and the arrow pointing to it. So this one has got the up direction is actually west. So you can see Elmwood off to the left. You can see Mirage down below it, and you can see the store. So it'll be out there in that dirt lot, kind of where the leg of it is. The intent would be they'll have a C-train type container out there and a 7-foot tall screen fence. They'll have requirements to make sure that they're not making a mess. And recycling materials are pretty clearly defined as to what they are. We learned that from the School of Hard Knocks where we had someone trying to do radiators and transmissions and things. Those are not what you recycle. So this is an appropriate request for this site. It's mixed-use zoning. Fairly isolated there. It's an underutilized site. Staff would recommend approval for it. And they'll collect cans and bottles and plastics, that sort of thing. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bill. Are there any questions at this time? Seeing none, I will go ahead and open public hearing. Anyone who wishes to speak in favor of this proposal is invited to come forward and speak to that at this time. Seeing no one, if anyone wishes to speak in opposition to this proposal, they may come forward and speak at this time. Seeing no one, I will close public hearing and bring the item back before the council for any further questions or for a motion.
I'll move for approval.
Moved by Watson to approve Resolution 1949. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Sanchez.
Yes.
Will the clerk please take roll?
Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez.
Aye.
Councilmember Flores.
Aye.
And Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0. Item 9 is a second reading of Ordinance 577, pre-zoning of the wastewater treatment plant.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. We discussed this at the last council meeting where you had the annexation and the pre-zoning. So this is the second reading of Ordinance 577. You've got three parcels involved about a mile and a half west of the city that contain the Lindsay Wastewater Treatment Plant. The city owns these parcels, but they're under county jurisdiction because they're not inside the city limits. My understanding is we have the only one that is in this status, and so we're correcting that. And I mean, it's not an error. It's what we want to do, and there's a potential project that could occur out there that we would like to have tighter control of. As previously stated, they're outside of the city's city influence and sphere of influence. Law allows this to take place when it's non-contiguous, doesn't exceed 300 acres, and is owned by the city and being used for municipal purposes. And so we can legally annex the properties, which would take it to LAFCO. So this is the second reading of the ordinance. No recommendations were made to the ordinance, and so I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Bill on this?
All of the property is owned by the city, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
No one to be contacted.
Correct.
Okay, this is a second reading of Ordinance 577. What action council would like to take? I propose that the council adopt Ordinance Number 577, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Lindsay adopting Pre-Zone 1928, pre-zoning territory comprising of the city wastewater treatment plant located at a portion of the south half of Section 3, Township 20, Range 26 East, Mount Diablo Base and Meridian in the County of Tulare in the State of California. APN numbers 197, 090, 017 and 153210049 and 153250001 and with the reading of the ordinance.
Thank you. It's been proposed by Cortez. Is there a second?
I second.
Seconded by Flores. Would the clerk please take roll?
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Aye.
Councilmember Flores?
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez?
Aye.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball?
Aye. Motion carries 5-0. Our next item will be a public hearing. First reading of Ordinance 578. Accessory dwelling unit regulations.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ordinance 578 is a request by staff to amend Section 1814060 of Title 18. It's the old secondary dwelling unit ordinance, zoning ordinance. We discussed it in a study session recently, and we're simply coming into conformance with state law. This shall apply to all accessory dwelling units approved on or after the effective date of the ordinance codified in this section. The section provides standards by which the city shall evaluate building permit applications for permitted accessory dwelling units in the URRAR, RM, and PO zoning districts. It's something I've done in EI, EIO, huh? Mm-hmm. Lot requirements. It's got to contain an existing or proposed single-family main dwelling unit, so it's not going to go on a vacant lot, which kind of makes sense, doesn't it? It meets the minimum lot size of the applicable zoning district, is served by municipal water and sewer, does not currently contain an accessory dwelling unit. If it's detached, it shall not exceed 1,200 square feet, state law. If it's separated from the main dwelling unit, if it's attached to the main dwelling unit, the floor area of the accessory dwelling unit shall not exceed 50% of the existing living area of the prime unit. Manufactured home, and those are permitted within the city, shall not be less than 8 feet wide by 40 feet long and 320 square feet in floor area. And as an aside, there are other requirements for a mobile home. They have to be on foundations and have a roof with an overhang and so forth if that were to happen. Location, they've got to be either to the side or the rear of the existing single-family residence, either attached to the main dwelling unit or be separated from it by no less than 10 feet or whatever at the time current building code requirements would be, whichever is less. Owner occupancy was something that we included with this. Either the existing main unit or the existing dwelling unit shall be occupied by the owner of the property. The owner shall record a deed restriction in a form approved by the city that includes a prohibition on the sale of the accessory dwelling unit separate from the sale of the main dwelling unit. Requires owner occupancy consistent with the above and restricts the size and attributes of the accessory dwelling unit to those that conform with this section. Of course, if the law changes in the future, we'll have to change with it. off-street parking, we are requiring that if they are more than a half a mile from a public transit stop, then one additional parking space would be required. We kind of already have a parking problem in the streets because we have residential overcrowding. The addition of the accessory dwelling unit shall not decrease the amount of the existing on-site parking. So they won't replace an on-site parking space with a dwelling unit and create, you know, a worse problem. And a separate connection from the main dwelling for utilities is not required. And that's the long and the short of it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bill. Are there any questions at this time for Bill? I have one question. So there's a minimum size if it's a mobile home. Is there a minimum size in general for a dwelling unit?
Minimum size?
Yeah.
I don't know of a minimum size, maximum size.
Was it the maximum size that you talked about for the mobile home?
The mobile home was, let me find it here. Manufactured home shall not be less. So it's a minimum.
So it had a minimum for the mobile home. I just wondered if there was a minimum.
I think the mobile home minimum, and I'm speculating here, but it's so that you don't have someone living permanently in a travel trailer.
Right. I get it, but can someone live in a little tiny house? That's okay.
Of course.
As long as it has water or whatever.
That's what they're wanting.
But the state
I don't have a solid answer for you. I think they're you've seen the manufactured homes like were made at Champion Homes.
Right.
And I think the goal is to have something that's properly manufactured as opposed to something that's mobile. And we have prohibitions against people living in mobile homes with the wheels on. Again, when they put them on site, they've got to be on a permanent foundation. They've got to have an overhang with the roof, et cetera. I think that's all they're trying to achieve there. But if council likes, this isn't time critical. If you would like, I can go out and get more information and bring it back to you.
I just wondered. I'm surprised that maybe the state wouldn't have some minimum. You know, are they okaying tiny houses to be used as second units?
Yes, those are being approved everywhere.
As long as they have water and electricity.
Right? What surprises me is that we would have mobile homes in the city limits as a second dwelling. That's interesting.
They're authorized in the zoning code now. As a primary and a second dwelling unit, we were limited to 850 square feet, had to be detached in the back, additional parking. And we didn't have anybody apply for something like that. I think we would have had to have considered it had they applied to put a mobile home in that kind of configuration. So I can get more information for you, council, or whatever you want to do.
I think I'm okay as it stands. I was just curious. So I think that it sounds pretty good. I mean, I approve of we need a parking space generally, and the other regulations that we put in there sound good.
Then on the bigger cities, they're having, you know, they're looking at this even more close because they're trying to, you know, address the homeless issues. So it's going to have best interest to
Brett made a suggestion. This is just the first reading. I can, if council deems appropriate, you can approve the first reading, and I can go out and gather information.
If you change it after the first reading substantially, then you have to have another first reading.
Okay. It's fine the way it is.
Again, it's not time sensitive. So,
well, I think it's fine. I mean, I don't think we need to put. I just wondered if the state had put any minimum size requirements.
I'll have to research it.
If they have, then that's fine. We'll have to.
Well, would that be necessary
agree with
to
that,
put it in?
But
there?
I don't know that we have to put it in.
I think most of this was pulled right out of the state law.
And I'll just say, I think people would be interested in doing something a little bit bigger instead of doing something smaller. I think that's the way. That's why maybe it was written this way. They can go up too, but didn't consider the. How small it could be.
Well, I mean, it does say it's got to have, like, water and, like, a kitchen and whatever and a bathroom of some sort. And, I mean, it has to have all those things, so it has to be has to have some size to it. Okay. Well, what action would the council like to
take? This is a public hearing.
Oh, it is a public hearing. Okay. So then I will open public hearing on this item and invite anyone in the audience who wishes to speak in favor of this ordinance to do so now. And seeing no one, if anyone would like to speak in opposition to this ordinance, they may do so now. And seeing no one, we will close public hearing and bring the item back before the council. For further questions or motion.
I propose that the council declare the first reading of ordinance number 578, an ordinance amending chapter 18.14 of title 18 of the Lindsay Municipal Code, removing and adding procedures for accessory dwelling units, and waive the reading of the ordinance in full.
Okay, it's moved by Sanchez. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Cortez. Will the clerk please take roll?
Councilmember Sanchez.
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
Councilmember Flores.
Aye.
Councilmember Watson.
Aye.
Mayor Kimball.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0. Item 11 will be a video presentation for Rail Safety Month, and this will be presented by City Service Director Mike Henry.
Thank you, Mayor. Kimball and Council. There's also a proclamation involved with this agenda item, but we're a little bit ahead of the curve, which is a good thing in this particular case. Some council members have seen this video presentation, but just the background is that typically Operation Lifesaver works through TCAG for support of declaring September as Railroad Safety Month. How important is that? Well, you can read through the agenda item, but I think the most amazing statistic is that in 1972, and it's a rough number, but there were 12,000 annual incidents on railways. And in 2018, 2,214, significant decrease. And so the word is getting out, but still, California leads the way in number of fatalities on a railway crossing. We have two video presentations tonight. One is 15 to 20 seconds long. It's a public service announcement, really important. The other video is about 7 minutes long, and some of you have seen this. Others have not. It can be a little graphic. No blood, but still, it's very, very crucial information, and the more we can get out, the better. So with that, let's look at that real quickly first. Oops,
that's moving. Sound. Got some audio?
Hi. Is that this?
Should be. There we go.
Get out of your vehicle. For help, call the number on the blue and white emergency notification system sign at the crossing. Give them the crossing number to alert train traffic. Remember, find the blue and white to save your life.
There we go.
So that one's pretty simple information, but most people we find don't even recognize those blue signs and are really critical in an accident situation. So this next video, again, it's 7 minutes long. It is very, very instructive.
The first train car northbound is on fire. We have multiple injured
people. 2,000-ton train of three barreling down the avenue.
We hit a big truck. We're on the ground.
It's a horrifying experience.
Hundreds of people are killed at crossings every year, and these are completely preventable. One of the ways we can prevent these accidents is for the public to do their job. The emergency notification system provides motorists or pedestrians with a phone number that they can call, and then they'll be able to stop train traffic that's heading in that direction. It's the first phone call you want to make if there's anything happening at a crossing. You want to stop any oncoming train.
Every grade crossing is protected with an emergency notification sign. What that provides is an emergency notification phone number that the passenger or the motorist can immediately notify the railroad of any emergency at that crossing. The locator crossing number, which is 6 digits and a letter, can effectively tell the train dispatcher exactly where they are. When you call that number, you're talking to the train dispatcher specifically associated with that railroad.
You're getting a response right away because the train dispatcher picks up and he's going to ask what location are you at. And you give them that DOT number. Stay clear of the tracks. Let the dispatcher handle everything from that point on. Once you get that call in, for me to contact the locomotive engineer on the train, it could be 5-10 seconds. I'm going to get them on the radio immediately and say, bring your train to a safe stop. This is, we have an emergency situation ahead. Call 911 is not going to stop the train from coming. The first responder is your train dispatcher in this case. That 800 number is going to get you right to the first responder.
Unfortunately, far too often people get complacent around railroad track. That's really a recipe for harm or disaster.
If you're towing a vehicle, if you're a fire engine responding to an emergency situation, you still need to let the railroad know that you're in that space, that you are close to the tracks or you're on the tracks.
The EMS sign can be located in many places, either on the crosswalk, directly at the crossing, or on the silver box, which is usually located adjacent to the crossing. So you should call it if you suspect that the gates are malfunctioning, if you see a vehicle that's stuck on the tracks, if you see any suspicious activity, if you see something that looks out of place, or an object that's obstructing the tracks. As soon as your vehicle is stuck on the tracks, if you see the train approaching the crossing, you need to get away from that vehicle as soon as possible and run at a 45-degree angle towards the train. Far too many times we see people trying to save their vehicles, and the unfortunate reality is when they're trying to save their vehicles, in many cases they lose their life.
These incidents also have a profound impact on locomotive engineers. That individual may have long-term effects from this incident that affect them professionally and personally.
If something happens and you are stuck on the grade crossing, the first thing you want to do is get your car off. So just drive through the gate. The gates are meant to break away, and so you will be able to get to the other side. You never want to be stuck in a crossing. So don't try to get over the crossing until you know you can get to the other side. Don't be stuck in traffic and sitting on a grade crossing, on a railroad crossing, in the path of the train.
Okay, one possibly trapped in the train, but realize I got a DOA in the train as well.
It's a horrifying experience. We've had careers that have been injured as a result of these incidents.
Every one of these accidents breaks our heart, and we need to do everything we possibly can to keep people off those crossings and away from them.
A lot of folks look at active grade crossings where you have gates and arms as an inconvenience and an annoyance. Those arms are not there to prevent you from being where you want to be, but to help you get there safely.
Didn't we put this up on City?
Mm-hmm.
We did.
I think we did.
We might want to consider doing that again because that is good information.
So the message is getting out there. It's being successful. But like other jurisdictions that also support the Railway Safety Proclamation, that's what we're being asked for tonight, September, as Railway Safety Month. With that, begins to engage.
Thank you, Mike. So we need a motion to approve the proclamation from our city for September to be Rail Safety Month.
So moved.
Moved by Watson.
Second.
Second by Cortez. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Item 12 is presentation of the housing element draft.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. So, not too long ago, Council went through a study session with Carl Schlout. It was pretty in-depth, pretty involved. He talked about why we have a housing element, what we do with it, what direction has been, both from the state and then local direction toward housing. Now, he's accomplished this. And you have it in the draft housing element that you have at your dais stations there. So I'll go through a few things with you. And this is, I don't intend to spend a lot of time on it tonight. This is the 50,000 feet overview of what we're trying to achieve with this. So the 2019 general plan housing element has been drafted and is submitted for initial council review and comment. So we'd ask that you take it home, look it over, provide comments. You can any form of communication you want with me, I'll be happy to receive that from you. The housing element serves as the long-range housing plan for the city. It provides important community background information, as well as recommended policies and actions to improve and sustain existing housing and meet future housing needs in Lindsay. The draft element identifies sufficient, vacant, and underdeveloped land in the city limits to serve a range of housing needs for many years. The draft element emphasizes, and these are things that we're focusing on, less city participation in the development of lower income housing. That was our bread and butter for a long, long, long time. Focusing city first-time homebuyer efforts on existing housing and limited infill redevelopment projects. Focusing on housing rehabilitation. Targeting code enforcement efforts toward housing maintenance and overcrowding. City assistance for new housing development efforts focusing on special needs groups and above moderate income housing. The special needs is required by law. We've recognized that for economic diversity, we need to get some of our teachers and professionals in town. And so that's what the above moderate income households would be. Fast action implementation items that are realistic given the existing constrained resource environment. For example, we no longer have a community development department. We don't have all the staff necessary to do the many things that it does to properly manage the grants, say, that in the programs that would be related to housing. So you have in your draft document the steps to meet state requirements, but also the acknowledgement that we're going to be weak in some areas, and we say it right up front. We will do the best we can. We will compete for grants when we're allowed to, and we're working out things with HCD right now. So when we are back and able to compete with that, we can do those things, and we know that there's a need for housing rehabilitation. You got grandmas and grandpas living out there that need a new roof, that need new plumbing, electrical, and we've done a lot of that. And I repeat something that came up. The city of Lindsay has done a very good job in providing affordable housing, probably better than about any small city in our valley, and that's been recognized. So the action requested is that you would take these draft documents and review them, And we would ask that you provide comments as you see fit and recommendations that you might have that aren't included there. And we would ask that you recommend the releasing of the document for public review and comment as soon as possible. Formal action by council on the element is anticipated in December. So we've got some time here, but we do need to get you looking at it, get the public looking at it, get different agencies looking at it as soon as we can. And I think I'll stop there, see if you have any questions.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions concerning the housing element?
I just want to add that, and I don't know if they, you know, maybe are kind of related, but back on July 31st, there was an article in the Sun Gazette saying that Lindsay is among the fastest growing cities in the valley, and it's attributed to, you know, all the housing that has been developed in the recent years. So I think, you know, that's a good thing. We're in a good spot.
And if I may mention as an aside, Self-Help Enterprises is pursuing phase two of their apartment complex, and some of that money is what's going to help us build a transit center, a transit-oriented project.
Bill, what we need is a minute order to what recommend that this be posted for public
view. Yes, ma'am.
Anyone care to make a motion to that effect?
Sure. I'll move for distribution.
Moved by Watson. Is there a second?
One second.
Seconded by Sanchez. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Item 13 is Resolution 1947 to appoint Jack Urquhart as city clerk.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So as council is keenly aware, Brett Harmon currently serves as our city clerk. He's also the director of finance. He will become the interim city manager on September 1st. He'll maintain the director of finance role while serving as the interim manager. It'd be appropriate to relieve him of his city clerk duties, considering the additional responsibilities that he will be undertaking. I recommend Jack Urquhart, who currently serves as a deputy city clerk. He's done a commendable job for us, to become the city clerk. He's proven capable and ready to assume the role of city clerk. At the last meeting, council asked for his resume, which was provided. You have two people in the organization with master's degrees in public admin, one sitting next to me, one sitting over there. They've been expressly trained for this sort of thing for roles in government leadership, and I believe that he is fully qualified. And so for alternatives, you can appoint him as a city clerk. You can choose not to appoint him a city clerk, in which case Brett would continue as the city clerk. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bill.
Is there any option to put it out to the public?
It's a recommendation that I make. That's my recommendation.
Because I did read his resume, and he has no experience as far as job experience doing this.
He's been serving as the deputy city clerk.
For a month and a half?
He's doing a great job.
And he's doing a great job. And I just want to say, I completed my first master's in the public administration department at Cal State Bakersfield. And doing that program, when you complete your thesis, you are completing your thesis as you're working in the city in the different departments. So it does give you a lot of experience, because you do have to get in contact with other cities and employees to develop that thesis that could be a plan for any potential city. So that's part. And another thing that I didn't notice on Jack's resume, but I know he is bilingual. So he's fluent in Spanish, and I tested him before our council meeting. And
it's my concern that we have a lot of people in this area that do have master's degrees, and we're not given the opportunity to apply for this position. That is my concern. And it's a concern I'm going to have until we have a policy on how to recruit people.
The great thing about this is that we don't have to hire someone else. He's already sitting here. This does not cost us additional monies. We're just appointing him the assistant, who's doing a great job as the full-time clerk.
Well,
do we need a motion for this?
There has been, there was a breach of confidentiality. And I have ran this through some officials that I know, and that breach of confidentiality is good enough to be fired for. We received pertinent information on a business person that no one should have received.
I move
and
that we appoint Jeff
finished.
Urquhart.
I'm sorry, I haven't
the,
finished
city
yet.
Clerk. Yeah, but it's irrelevant.
Yes, it is irrelevant.
It is irrelevant.
It is relevant.
Yeah. No, I
so
make a
motion.
So
what you're doing is you're interrupting me.
I think that we need to be respectful of each other and, you know, finish talking or, you know, putting your point across, and then we can move on
right.
with motions as needed.
Because that type of breach of confidentiality, you guys wouldn't want your driver's license or your social security number out there for anybody to read. And that was clearly done when we received those proposals for the cannabis. And to me, that does not represent someone that knows what he's doing, as you say that he does.
And I know that you've brought this up with the city manager, and which is the proper place to bring it up, and I'm sure it's been discussed.
Well, but a lot of the council persons didn't know. Did you know, Laura?
About what?
About that breach of confidentiality?
Well, I wasn't part of that committee reading that, so I wasn't privy to that information.
Yeah, but the thing is, it happened. And, you know, Brett, too, you should have looked everything over. You're responsible. And now you're going to become an interim city manager. Those things cannot fly like that. It's concerning people's lives when you give out that confidential information.
So you're saying that if somebody else had prepared those copies, they would have done a better job? Is that what you're saying?
When you're in management, you're responsible for not letting those things happen.
Did they get out to public?
They got out to us and to whoever else was looking through them.
But to the public?
Which is the committee.
Or the committee.
The committee members, yeah.
Okay. And they did they take it out to the public?
I don't know.
All right. We need to stay focused on the merits and substance of the matter at hand, which is whether or not we will appoint.
Well, I move to approve Resolution 1947 to appoint Jack Urquhart as city clerk.
Second.
It's been moved by Cortez and seconded by Watson. Would the clerk please take roll?
Right. Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Aye.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Councilmember Flores?
No.
Councilmember Sanchez?
No.
Mayor Kimball?
Aye. Motion carries 3-2. And with that, we are going to go into closed session again. So, we thank you for being here tonight.